Brethren, a few weeks ago, I gave a sermon, and the title was The Coming of the Son of Man. It was based on the 14 areas in the Olivet Prophecy in Matthew 24 and 25, where Jesus mentioned that he would be coming. And I used that as an introduction to the topic today as well, because there are a lot of other details in the Olivet Prophecy, in addition to the coming of Jesus Christ when he comes in glory and establishes his kingdom, and we are granted eternal life and to be there with him. That, to me, is the ultimate message of the prophecy that he gave to his disciples. But there's more there, as we all know, as well. So I wanted to address that second layer of information today. As the time for Passover drew near that year, Jesus was thinking of some of the most important aspects of the work that he was sent to accomplish. He was focusing on those he had come to save, even those who didn't yet know that. You know, there's a verse that says that we should let this mind be in you, which was also in Jesus Christ. And so as I was studying for the sermon, I said, what was his mindset as he approached that day in this discussion with his disciples? As he looked at the city of Jerusalem, he felt sorrow for the people who lived there before, in the centuries even before, and who lived there during that time as well. He had come to save them, all of them, not just those living then, but those living before as well. He'd come to save them, but they didn't know that yet. Let's begin with seeing his mindset as this time approached. In Matthew 23, last couple verses, verse 37 through 39, Jesus, as he was in that very last week of his ministry on earth, so much going on in his mind, so many things to finish before his sacrifice. And he had been there in Jerusalem, and now he was stepping away from there. And as he did, he said this, "O Jerusalem, Jerusalem, the one who kills the prophets and stones those who are sent to her. How often I wanted to gather your children together as a hen gathers her chick under her wings, but you were not willing. See, your house is left to you desolate. For I say to you, you shall see me no more till you say, 'Blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord.'" He said he would come back. That's implied in what he was saying there. You will see me no more until this happens, until you say this. You know, they had said that just a while before, as he came in what is called the triumphal entry into the city. He came in riding on a colt, and this very phrase was said, "Blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord." This is after that he says it again. And he's quoting here from Psalm 118. I want to turn and read a few verses there as we get into his message, maybe his mindset, as he begins this Olivet prophecy. In Psalm 118, verse 25, is where we'll begin. "Save me, I pray, O Lord. O Lord, I pray, send now prosperity. Blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord." This is what was on the mind of Christ as he was looking there at Jerusalem, lamenting over the city. He says, continuing, "We have blessed you from the house of the Lord." In Matthew 24, he's speaking of that house of the Lord, the temple. Verse 27 here says, "God is the Lord, and he has given us light. Bind the sacrifice with cords to the horns of the altar. You are my God, and I will praise you. You are my God, I will exalt you. Oh, give thanks to the Lord, for he is good, for his mercy endures forever. Jesus was thinking of these things as he began to wind down his ministry and came time for this important information to be shared with his disciples. It was then, just 2 days before Passover, that he had a private conversation with his disciples. And it started out as they left the temple. We can pick this up in Matthew 24, verse 1 and 2. And this will be the two chapters we'll spend most of the time in during this message, Matthew 24 and 25. He says, as we start out in verse 1, then Jesus went out and departed from the temple. So it gives us the setting. We know the time frame as well. And his disciples came to him to show him the buildings of the temple. And Jesus said to them, do you not see all these things? Assuredly, I say to you, not one stone shall be left here upon another that shall not be thrown down. He had just in his own thoughts mentioned these things that we've just read in chapter 23. His concern was for that city, for that temple. He knew something so very difficult was going to be happening. You know, as I was preparing, I was thinking over the decades when I've been hearing a message about this prophecy of Jesus Christ, I've often heard it from passionate preachers speaking the truth, but focusing on how bad things will be and on how difficult it will be for people. And yes, it's there and it will be, but what if we approach this message today from the point of view that Jesus Christ is speaking of people he loved, he came to save, and he's sorry for what they're going to go through. And he's speaking to people he loved even more, and that is to his disciples, who the Father had given to him, and he didn't want to lose even one. He's speaking to people he loved very much, and this is a message to help them to come through the difficult time ahead. So if our focus can be in that direction today, let's see what else we can learn from what he had to say. In verse 3, the conversation turns. And as he sat on the Mount of Olives, the disciples came to him privately saying, and so this is a private conversation, a private talk. It's not something he's preaching to the multitudes. This is to his special beloved disciples. And they said, tell us, when will these things be, and what will be the sign of your coming and of the end of the age? And so that's what triggered his conversation with them. In the previous sermon, our focus again was on his coming. That was part of their question, and we saw that 14 times that he made that very, very clear to them. It seemed appropriate for me to open with the verses that illustrate the mindset of Jesus Christ, because if we do, I think we could learn even more that will help us, as he intended this message would help his disciples. In his answer to them, he spoke of things that would happen and conditions that would have to be faced in the world. He also told them what to do so that they would be sure to be there with him when he returns. That was his point. Don't let these things take you away. So today, let's consider some of the events that Jesus described in this prophecy and what he then said his followers should do. Dr. Ward gave a sermon some years ago at the General Conference of Elders about this prophecy, and he used the phrase description and prescription. A And so in this, we see the description of events, but we see the prescription of Christ in how to make sure that we can be safely brought into his family and into the kingdom. Some of the things that he described are common to almost all of history. The message was that these things would intensify over the next centuries and be at their worst shortly before his return. We'll spend some time with this first event because it's where Jesus Christ started, but it's also one that I believe we can all learn more to understand more fully. And that is that the temple would be destroyed. Let's look here and pick it up in these verses. We'll scan through some of these. And today, it's just a survey of these things to bring some principles to mind, which we all could study later as well. In Matthew 24:2 is where he started that conversation. Do you not see all these things? Surely I say to you, not one stone shall be left here upon another that shall not be thrown down. This was to something that would affect not only that building, but the city of Jerusalem itself, the one he lamented over, saying that he would see them again, and when he did, they would then say, blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord. They would need to understand that he would save them. There are some events that connect to the destruction of this temple, and therefore Jerusalem itself. So let's pick some of these up as we look through this chapter and the ones in Mark and Luke, and some references there as well. In Matthew 24:15, speaking of the temple and the events that he described to them that would happen. Therefore, when you see the abomination of desolation spoken of by Daniel the prophet standing in the holy place. And so here we can understand that this is something that happened already many years before in the 2nd century BC when Antiochus Epiphanes, who was the one who destroyed the temple, he set up the abomination, it's called, of desolation. There's much history that can be read there. It's not my point today to get into all of those details, which are quite graphic. But he was pointing this out to them, something that happened before, and something like that was going to happen again. When you see that, he says, whoever reads, let him understand. And so we should be looking into these things. He says, then let those who are in Judea flee to the mountains. There would be something that would trigger the need to get away if they would pay attention. Whoever reads, let him understand, he said. It would be seen standing in the holy place. This had happened before. It's a historical record, actually here referenced in Scripture itself, so we know it's true, and we know there's history there to look back and help us understand. And according to his words, it was to happen again. In Luke 21, we see something that would trigger this. Hold your place in Matthew. We'll see Luke's account. He adds these details. And actually, there's some consideration among the commentaries that these are two different events, but yet they're contained both in the same prophecy. So let's see what Luke says about this. In Luke 21 and verse 20, but when you see Jerusalem surrounded by armies, then know that its desolation is near. And we could look forward from the time when Christ said these things to 70 AD. Another well-documented historical event happened when this was occurring, when armies surrounded Jerusalem. And it was made desolate. It says, then let those in Judea flee to the mountains. Those in Judea, in that region, those who were near where this city was being surrounded. Let those who are in the midst of her depart, and let not those who are in the country enter her. For these are the days of vengeance, that all things which are written may be fulfilled. And he goes on with some details about what would happen. And he says in verse 27, they will fall by the edge of the sword and be led away captive into all nations, and Jerusalem will be trampled by Gentiles. And he adds, until the times of the Gentiles are fulfilled. So there's so much here to study and learn over our lifetime as we learn what he is saying to us. Back in Matthew 24, we pick it up. I'm just going to scan through, and I hope I'm raising questions in your mind, and you'll write them down, and we can talk about them, and we can look them up. In Matthew 24, verse 21, it says this, "For then there will be great tribulation, such as has not been since the beginning of the world until this time, no, nor ever shall be." And again, as we read these things, keep in mind how we started this message, the mindset of Jesus Christ. He's not like talking in loud voice, like a preacher passionate to get people to wake up from their darkness. He's talking to his beloved disciples and telling them, this is going to happen. Make sure it doesn't happen to you. He's telling them how bad it will be. And verse 22 says, "And unless those days were shortened, no flesh would be saved, but for the elect's sake, these days will be shortened." It's 2-3 days before Christ was to be sacrificed. This is what he's telling his disciples, so that they would be aware. He wasn't trying to scare them, he was trying to warn them, so that they could warn other people as well. Jerusalem would be surrounded, the temple would be destroyed, and along with it, all of Jerusalem too. I brought with me today a reference book because some of these things can be shown in history. And one of the historians who was living during that time period was Josephus. And he writes extensively about what Jesus Christ said here in these verses we've just read. He's recorded in his history of that age, many of these same details, graphically describing how they unfolded. This is actually a copy that was printed in 1858, 165 years ago. And I opened these pages and read the fulfillment of what Jesus Christ said would happen. The reason I brought this copy is to show that these things have been known historically by God's people for all this time. Christ said it would happen. Josephus and others recorded that it did. And we can read these and see these things. And among the details, there are things that are written in this book that are so graphic, I really would not want to read them out loud to you. They're so bad. What we read in the scripture is detailed enough. The historical accounts get into the blood and gore of it, and it's really terrible things that happened back then. And it was a time of great tribulation, as Christ said it would be in that generation. This book kind of confirms many of the details here that we see. Connected apparently to this destruction of Jerusalem would be that great tribulation. And it says, such as never has been nor ever shall be. I'm spending a little time on this because there's a school of thought that believes and is very passionate about it, that the Great Tribulation has already occurred and never will again, and that it was in 70 AD. And truly, brethren, if you read the details, you understand it was terrible. It was listed here as a great tribulation in the words of Christ himself. But was there more? Was that the end of that prophecy, or would there be more? And I can understand why some would think that That was the one and only occurrence, and that it's now over, not to happen again. But I would read these words also from the words of Christ in Matthew 24 and verse 29. Immediately after the tribulation of those days that is just described in the verses above, the sun will be darkened, and the moon will not give its light, the stars will fall from heaven, and the powers of the heavens will be shaken. Then the Son of Man will appear in heaven. So these are things that have not yet happened, and it would be, as it says, immediately after the tribulation of those days. When we see this, and there are other indications of it, even in Matthew 24 and 25, of this tribulation that would come toward the end of the age before Christ returns, when we read it there, but we also can see in the book of Revelation, another reason I believe that the tribulation that is written of here is yet to come, because look in Revelation, hold your place here. Look in Revelation 1. And the book of Revelation was written after 70 AD, perhaps as late as the early 90s AD. This was written after the destruction of Jerusalem. This was written after all those things happened in that generation that was so very terrible. In Revelation 1, just pick up a few verses. Verse 1, the revelation of Jesus Christ, which God gave him to show his servants, things which must shortly take place. So in this book, we would see things that must shortly take place. And he sent and signified it by his angel to his servant John. In verse 19, it says, write these things which you have seen, and the things which are, and the things which will take place after this. And throughout the book of Revelation, we see some of these things that Jesus spoke of now being written in this book some many years later after the temple was destroyed. In chapter 4 and verse 1, it says, after these things I looked, and behold, a door standing open in heaven. And the first voice I heard, which I heard, was like the trumpet speaking with me, saying, come up here, and I will show you things which must take place after this. And so we see this time element that is spoken of. So I believe here in this book, we see the evidence that is yet to unfold. Look in chapter 7 then, speaking specifically of the tribulation. It says this in chapter 7. You can read verses 9 through 17, but we'll focus on verse 14 where it says, and I said to him, sir, you know. The question was, who are these multitudes of people? Where did they come from? And he said to me, these are the ones who come out of the great tribulation. And in the Greek, that word the is the article is there, is specific. The great tribulation. These are the ones who come out of the great tribulation and washed their robes and made them white in the blood of the Lamb. These are the ones who are standing there before the throne of God. And so I look at these and see, in my understanding and the way I've been taught, is that Christ was speaking of a tribulation that was yet to come. We could dwell more on that. It's just the beginning, the first of the elements that he spoke to of his disciples. But I did want to lay the foundation because I think it might be helpful to us to understand some of these time elements as well. Back in Matthew 24, Jesus said that there would be religious deception and that we should take heed not to be deceived. You see in Matthew 24, verse 4 and 5, and we could scan down through these first 12 or 14 verses here and pick up many of the events that he described that would happen. There would be religious deception. Jesus answered and said to them, "Take heed that no one deceives you, for many will come in my name, saying, 'I am the Christ.'" You know, this is something that may sound unusual to us, that someone would actually claim to be the Christ. I saw a video of such an event, and I recorded it and have it on my computer at home. It's one of those things where it would be so controversial. If I were to play it here, it would probably shut us down because there would be such an outcry in the community because it's not politically correct to do those things. But I have a video of someone standing before a large group of people in the church where he was, claiming to be the Messiah. It, Christ said it would happen. And literally, it does to the degree that he said. And so there would be religious deception, and many would be deceived. He continues with this theme in verse 11. He says, there will be many false prophets will rise up and deceive many. He's telling his disciples, there's going to be so many reasons for you to pay attention, so many things to avoid, and not fall into the traps that will arise. Verse 23 and 26, then if anyone says to you, "Look, here is the Christ," or "There," do not believe it. For false Christs and false prophets will arise and show great signs and wonders. Again, our focus would be on Christ giving this message to his beloved disciples. It's not in a context of an angry discourse toward sinners. It's what he wants his disciples to know, to be prepared so that they are okay. Another event is that there would be wars and rumors of wars. That's happened since the time of Cain and Abel and onward. And it says we should see that we are not troubled. Have any of you actually, don't raise your hands, but just think about this. Have any of you actually been in combat situations in the military setting? I know some of our people in the past have. And God calls people from those kinds of backgrounds to be in his church. There would be wars and rumors of wars, and those things are very horrible. They're very difficult to go through. It says, see that you are not troubled. Such things must come to pass. He says, but the end is not yet. You see this in Matthew 24, verse 6 and 7. But the end is not yet. There would be wars from the time that Jesus said this, rumors of them. There'll come a time, as Isaiah said, when they will learn war no more. And they will beat their swords into plowshares. We look forward to that. And Christ wanted his disciples to be sure to be there at that time. But just because there are wars doesn't mean that he is ready to come, or it's the time for him to come. He said in verse 7, there would be famines and pestilences and earthquakes in various places. You want to understand about famines and how people react during famines? Josephus covers it pretty well when he talks about what happened when 1 to 1.5 million people were surrounded in the city of Jerusalem, and many of them starved to death in the famine that was created in that siege. It's pretty graphic. When Christ says there'll be famines, he means that it's going to be really hard on a lot of people, parents and children and brothers and sisters and everyone. And it's not easy to go through those things. He said in Matthew 24 and verse 9, again, coming back to religion, that there would be religious persecution rising to levels of tribulation. See this. Verse 9, they will deliver you up to tribulation. Just a little focus on that. There are several times when this word tribulation shows up, and it's difficult every time. There is a tribulation, but there is that time coming that he kept warning of them when it would be the greatest that ever had been. They will deliver you up to tribulation and kill you, and you will be hated by all nations for my name's sake. And think of this. He's telling his friends, this is what we're going to have to face. There would be many who would become offended and betray one another and hate one another. Again, that's hard to deal with. Josephus writes of that. And all the things that Christ said just unfolded in that one big event when Jerusalem was surrounded and many things happened. A lot of what Christ said was fulfilled in that time period of 70 AD and the few years after it, in fact. There would be a time of lawlessness abounding. We can look at our time and say, yes, we see that. And there's so many ways we could put that understanding into our minds. Lawlessness abounds even more in times of famine. Lawlessness abounds when people struggle to find the next bite to eat so that they can stay alive for another day. In so many ways, lawlessness would abound when people are religiously deceived, as he was warning. Many of these things, and they're very difficult even to hear sometimes, aren't they? A sermon that speaks of these things is sometimes kind of a downer, isn't it? Well, Christ spoke of these so that we'd be aware. But notice how things change. Notice what he does. He tells them those things, and then he reminds them of their calling. Look in Matthew 24 and verse 13. He begins to change and lift that understanding. And he says, Matthew 24, 13, "But he who endures to the end shall be saved." You, my disciples, he says, you can be saved. You will be saved. You endure to the end. To the actual end, this means. It's not to some intermediate end. To the actual end. And so we can see this. We endure individually until our last breath, until we have finished our race, until we endure to the end of our mortal lifetime. He who endures to the end shall be saved. What a very positive thing that is. He's telling them that all that can happen and you can be saved. This gospel of the kingdom, he said, would be preached. Notice this wonderful news. Among all those bad things that he said would be happening at the same time, this would be happening. And this gospel of the kingdom will be preached in all the world as a witness to all nations, and then the end will come. This gospel had not been preached in all the world in 70 AD. And Christ has been actively working to make sure that it is more and more until the time when it reaches this fullness. Then the end will come. And it's a blessing for that we are here because others believed and preached this gospel and we heard it and God called us and we were converted. What a blessing it is that there's time for this to happen for us and for others as well. The gospel will be preached, the good news that Jesus Christ will come again, put an end to all of these tribulations and deceptions and wars and all of this, and we will be saved. And then he says, as we read already, but let's go back and pick it up, in verse 29, immediately after the tribulation of these days, he's built to this point, now he's showing them that he will come again. And I like to read these, even though we've read them before. Immediately after the tribulation of those days, the sun will be darkened, and the moon will not give its light. He begins to speak of things that are done through the power of God, and man has nothing to do with what's happening here. This is God intervening. The sun will be darkened, and the moon will not give its light. The stars will fall from heaven, and the powers of the heavens will be shaken. Then the sign of the Son of Man will appear in heaven, and then all the tribes of the earth will mourn, and they will see the Son of Man coming on the clouds of heaven with power and great glory. The disciples had asked, what would be the sign of your coming and of the end of the age? And he gives them this sign here. This is the sign. You see him coming? That's the sign. And he will send his angels with a great sound of a trumpet, and they will gather together his elect from the four winds, from one end of heaven to the other. This is so beautifully written, so positive in the way it guides us through those difficult times and into the time when Christ returns. And so we have to understand what he's saying and to live in such a way that we can, in fact, be there with him. Brethren, we've looked in very brief form at some of the events that Jesus Christ described. Now let's look and see what he prescribed for us. It's here in these same chapters, keeping in mind as a conversation with his own disciples. Let's go back and pick some of these up, the prescriptions, and we don't need to read all the details this time. We just see what he said to do about them. Back in Matthew 24 and verse 4, and Jesus answered and said to them, take heed that no one deceives you. Be careful of what we believe. For all of us, this is a prescription to understand how to live and grow and to be the disciples of Jesus Christ who will be with him when he returns. Take heed that no one deceives us. Be careful what we believe in verse 23. And he gave us ways to discern the times that we live in. Look in verse 32. Now learn this parable from the fig tree. When its branch has already become tender and puts forth leaves, you know that summer is near. In this prophecy, Jesus Christ gave several parables to help us to understand what we need to do in order to avoid the difficulties that others would fall into. So, verse 33, you also, when you see all these things, know that it is near at the very doors. Assuredly, I say to you, this generation will by no means pass away till all these things are fulfilled. And I believe he did mean that generation he lived in. In 30, 33 AD, in that time period, and then from then to the time of the fall of Jerusalem and the destruction of the temple in 70 AD, there were people who lived there, saw that. And it happened. But I think he's also speaking of our generation today and things that we will face too. He said in Matthew 24 and verse 6 about wars, see that you are not troubled. How could you not be troubled when the apartment buildings around you are hit by drones that blow them up and kill everybody inside? How could you not be troubled when you see the things happening that we can see in the warfares that are shown on television now in real time? We don't have to be troubled because we can have the mind of Christ to understand and to know that even if we are killed in war, we will be saved and be in his kingdom. See that you are not troubled, he said. And so that's something that we can have as a mindset to help us to be able to continue on in this life, no matter how difficult things are. He tells us again to endure. In verse 13, to endure. How do we endure? I look around and see among us people who are great examples of enduring in difficult things already in your life. But if it became even more difficult, you could still endure. And with God's help, we all will. This word endure means to abide under, to bear up courageously under suffering. And we just learn that sometimes through the smaller trials that we go through. We learn to endure and not give up. It's endure to the actual end. Luke writes of it in this way, in your patience, possess your souls. And so enduring takes patience, but in the process we possess our souls and we are able then to survive through those difficult times. In Matthew 24 and verse 15, another prescription is to pay attention. To pay attention to what he tells us so that we are aware. Look what it says here. Therefore, when you see the abomination of desolations. This word see is a Greek word eidon, E-I-D-O-N. It implies not the mere act of looking, but the actual perception of the object. And it's something where we see, we understand. He said it would happen, we're watching for it, we see. And then we could be safe from those things. Pay attention to what he warns us in all these areas. And he gets more and more focused on that as his prophecy unfolds. Another prescription that he gives to us is in Matthew 24 and verse 20. And pray. He says here, pray that your flight may not be in winter or on the Sabbath. We can apply that principle in all the other areas where he's warning us to watch and pray. And so, brethren, one of the prescriptions that leads to salvation is prayer. It's something he gives us a way to do so that we have that involvement in our own salvation. Not that we're earning it, but that we're seeking it. We're doing it in a way that draws us near to him. To believe the lessons from the holy days. You read through Matthew 24 and 25 and read it again and read it again and say, what's missing? Except then you realize it's here. And that's the understanding of the holy days that he gives to us. This was shortly before Passover. The holy day that he brings into sharp focus here is the Feast of Trumpets. And if we had the lessons of the holy days through all of the cycle of those days, we would not have these kind of problems that he lists in the world. If the world were living by the truth that we understand and believe that's revealed to us that way, we wouldn't have these wars and rumors of wars and famines and all that other stuff, because people would be living as they will in the kingdom. Believe the lessons from the holy days. And I'll just focus here on Matthew 24, verse 31. And he will send his angels with a great sound of a trumpet, and they will gather together his elect from the four winds, from one end of heaven to the other. I might develop that concept a little more, but I'll just put it there for now, to believe the lessons of the holy days. That will be a good prescription to avoid many of these problems. Another prescription is this in verse 36. But of that day and hour no one knows, not even the angels of heaven, but my Father only. So the prescription is don't become obsessed with figuring out the timing. I've known so many people over the years who devote so many days and years of their life supposedly figuring out the exact timing, even to the day when Christ will return. And Christ says only his Father knows that. He's telling his disciples there are more important things to spend our time on. It will happen. He will come. Let him figure it out. Let God figure it out on his time. And with that, then, he says in verse 42, watch, therefore, for you do not know what hour your Lord is coming. So don't be obsessed with trying to figure out the time. Just be careful. Watch. Watch and pray. Watch in a general way the conditions around us, but also in a very specific way. Like it says in verse 44, therefore you also be ready. So we can watch and see the world. We can understand the things he said in the beginning of this chapter. They are happening. They will. They get worse. But we be ready. If we're ready, for those disciples who were ready in 31, 35, 40 AD, in 70 AD when the temple was destroyed, when they were ready, those who are ready will stand with him. Those who died in all the centuries since then who are ready, they will stand with him. Those we've known and loved who have died in our own families and friends, they will stand with him. You also be ready, for the Son of Man is coming at an hour when you do not expect him. And so that's one of the big things that he's speaking here to his disciples. He kept mentoring them in the next chapter as well. This prophecy didn't end at the end of chapter 24. It went on for the next chapter of Matthew in 25. And he mentored his disciples in this way. In Matthew 25 now in verse 4, he's speaking in these great parables of his disciples whom he loves. He's speaking here in the parable of the wise and the foolish virgins. He says, the wise took oil in their vessels with their lamps. What a great prescription for us. Take oil in our lamps, in their vessels with their lamps. Back then they had these lamps were more like a dish or a bowl, sometimes with a fluted thing on top and where a wick could be put. The wick would go down into the oil and draw it up through the wick to burn the flame. And after a while, the oil would be gone. You have to pour more in from their vessel. So it's a pretty interesting and a very simple concept. We need to have a supply of oil and be ready to replenish that oil as it needs it in the lamps that we are able to have in our life. It's a very important thing, a very simple thing. He's telling his disciples, be ready. Jesus continued mentoring in this way. He said in Mark 13, and I'll just quote it for you in verse 9, but watch out for yourselves. Watch and be ready. This is what he kept speaking of, to watch. In Matthew 25, now verse 10, this is the same parable there of the wise and the foolish virgins. And while they went to buy, the bridegroom came, and those who were ready went in with him to the wedding, and the door was shut. That's what we want. That's what Christ wants, to be ready to come in, and then that door is shut. In verse 13, watch therefore, for you know neither the day nor the hour. He keeps coming to that. We can be ready. We want to be, as he says, to be found so doing. Notice what he said to the servants in Matthew 25. There's a parable of the talents in Matthew 25, verse 16 and 17. He said, then he who had received the five talents went and traded with them. He was very active. You know, it's interesting if you see the difference between the virgins and the servants. The virgins all slept, and some had oil and some didn't. The servants worked, and there's a different approach here. And so he's saying sometimes you gotta look at it in different ways so that we can understand it and then apply it in our own life. Then he who had received the 5 talents went and traded with them and made another 5 talents. It takes energy and thought and goal setting and consistency and effort to do this kind of work in business. Many of you have experience in these kinds of things too, to take a little bit and make it more so that we can grow our business and have the profit as well. In verse 17, and likewise he who had received 2 gained 2 more also. And you might almost think that it would be easier for the person with 5 talents to invest 5 to make more. If you only have 2, then you have to be really careful how you invest because you don't have much to work with. You've got to make sure you're doing a good job. And so there's a lot of wisdom that's involved here, and Christ is mentoring this. In verse 20, he says, and so he had received 5 talents, came and brought 5 other talents, saying, Lord, you delivered to me 5 talents. Look, I've gained 5 more talents besides these. His Lord said to him, well done, good and faithful servant. Let's understand that this is also part of the Olivet prophecy. It's not just the gloom and doom. It's not just the big bad things that happen. It's how Christ's disciples accomplish his work in their lives with his help and attain to his kingdom. His Lord said, well done, good and faithful servant. You were faithful over a few things. I will make you ruler over many things. Enter into the joy of your Lord. You imagine the disciples hearing that, and then in the years that followed, they say, he gave me these 5 talents. What will I do with them? And they did great work with his help. He told them that they would. They would do greater works than these, he said. And so we see this principle, this continuing ability that he gives them to understand that with their own involvement, they can overcome the difficulties of life. They can overcome the great problems that come upon them that are outside their control, the wars and rumors of wars, all of those kinds of things. They stay close to him and keep their mind on his work. The last of these principles I'd like to mention, and I'm going to state it in a way that may seem odd, but I don't think it could be stated more truly. Be a sheep. In the sense of helping others who are in need. Be a sheep. Look in Matthew 25, this famous passage we often read, verse 34. Then the king will say to those on his right hand, come, you blessed of my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. He's setting the sheep, as it says in verse 33, he will set the sheep on his right hand, but the goats on the left. We should want to be sheep, to be a sheep. You know, once when we were serving in another area, in another state, there was a gentleman just coming into the church, a ferocious background, he was so courageous. He was ex-military combat individual. He was hard as they get as far as the personality and his desire to be strong and courageous and do all those things. And I didn't know all that about him at the time, and I was giving a Bible study and I read something about the sheep. And he just instantly said, I ain't nobody's sheep. And it turned him, and it was like now he didn't want any part of this because he didn't want to be somebody's sheep. Be a sheep. When Christ comes, he wants to put us in the right place on his right hand. Help people. Serve the least of these, my brethren. This is the prescription that Jesus Christ is giving to his disciples. Come, you blessed of my Father, and inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. That's what he will say to the sheep. So we should be sheep. Brethren, today we just did a little survey of some of the things that Christ said would happen, the description of events. Did a little survey to show the very positive things of prescriptions he gives us as his people so that we can avoid all of the problems. Maybe we go through them, but we endure them. We're not letting the problems of life and the problems of this world derail us from our salvation. But even in our problems, even in our trials, even in our tribulations, we can still be the disciples of Jesus Christ, the ones he will say, come and inherit the kingdom prepared for you. I think this Olivet prophecy is more for the faithful disciples of Jesus Christ than it ever was meant to be a warning to the world. And can it be both? Yes. But he was speaking in a private sense to his disciples that night, and this is what he told them. Watch and pray and be ready.